Previously on the Sound of Football podcast. And then, anyway, so minutes later, Whiteley scored a goal, which is called an equaliser. And the same right back then berated the linesman in no uncertain terms as to the validity of the goal. And he used some extremely colourful words.
To which number two said, "F*** off."
He didn't just say "F*** off," he screamed "F*** off."
Yes,
from
did.
The other side of the pitch.
I just wanted to say to those lovely people at Net Radio UK, it's been great having you. great having our show on your channel. It's been great.
It was in context, Chris. You know.
Yes, it's the Sound of Football podcast with Terry DeFellin, Graham Sibley, and your host, Chris Oakley.
And it's a very warm welcome once again to another edition of the Sound of Football podcast. Glad you could join us. This week, we are turning our attention towards the England captaincy story, if you can call it that, which has been in the papers, certainly here in the UK, over the last week or so, and regards to the upcoming international against Wales. Who's going to get the captaincy? It turns out it's gone to John Terry, but we're going to discuss this on this particular podcast, whether he will bring sufficient enough to the role to have any kind of impact on the team's performance, and indeed perhaps look back on some of the England captains of the past and judge them on their merits too. So, well, let's start off then. This whole thing with John Terry then. Rio Ferdinand, of course, one would suspect would have got the captaincy. He's injured. It's gone to John Terry. I mean, we've discussed this on to some extent on a previous podcast before the last World Cup. We were talking about John Terry before, I don't know if it's just before or just after, probably the all the hoo-ha with him and his shenanigans off the field. He's now been given the captaincy back. How do we feel about that, and do we think he can maybe bring something back to the role on his return that can lift the team somehow?
I'm not really sure. I mean, the whole sort of like emphasis that's been put on the role of England captain, I think it's more something to talk about rather than actually anything that has an effect, I think, on the way that England as a team play. I would struggle to think, well, you know, if John Terry wasn't England captain, you know, who is the most natural successor to have there, and not bring up a whole list of names that I would find particularly objectionable to be the wearer of an armband. It's not a good time for England, because England don't exactly play very well. They're populated by a team, by players who, by and large, have some level of unpopularity in the press and the public alike. I mean, I think a lot of that is to do that most of them have direct deals made with certain arms of the media, and obviously, of course, if you're going to go side yourself with one red top, then that puts a couple of other red tops and any other number of tabloids against you. And of course, it's very, very fashionable to have a go at footballers. So, yeah, and they do bring it on themselves a lot of the time, so why not? And I think John Terry is one person who you can see really leaves himself open to a hell of a lot of abuse.
He does sort of epitomise that sort of modern celebrity footballer gone mad or bad. Not necessarily mad, although, you know, who knows.
Yeah, he's not exactly Charlie Sheen, is it?
No, not quite. He stopped short of making YouTube videos, but you know, you don't know. There's a lot could happen between now and Euro 2012.
Okay,
he probably goes on about winning a lot as well, though.
He probably does. He kind of, but I think he embodies the sort of the general antipathy that I think there is, that the English public, I think, have towards the England national team. And this is obviously, as Graham's sort of pointed out, is this sort of the celebrity culture of the England team that I think has backfired to a certain extent. Also, it's backed up with some extremely disappointing performances on the field in the World Cup. We were very, very poor. Mm-hmm. And a manager who's a bit of a lame duck, it's got to be said. I don't think that there's... I don't think there's a great deal of affection. In fact, I don't think there's any affection for the England national team amongst the broader public. I mean, obviously, the England fans are different. And I don't think there's a great deal of sort of like belief that they're going to do anything. So I think, if anything, there's perhaps a touch of weariness about it. Maybe there's a sort of element of, well, you know,
weariness or realism.
Yeah, maybe a bit of, well, kind of a bit of both, really. Perhaps an awakening, a sort of like, well, actually, do you know what? All this time, we all know the pattern, and we've all fallen for it before. But it's worth just going into. You know, usually what happens is England play well. We think they're going to do really well. They don't. We think they're going to do really badly. Then they start playing well again, and then we manage to convince ourselves, or we are convinced, depending on whether you're wearing a tinfoil hat or not, that they're going to win again, and then they don't, and then the cycle carries on. I wonder whether or not maybe the cycle has broken with England, and whether or not maybe people are just thinking, well, actually, no, we're not really that good. We're okay. We're nothing too special. So
let's just accept the circumstances as they are.
Which wouldn't actually be a bad thing. In terms of whether or not John Terry will make an impact or not, you know, they're playing Wales.
Actually, it would be a bad thing if you're someone from the FA and you're expected to sell out Wembley for every friendly, like their plan actually.
I mean, I think we're speaking from a point of view of perhaps slightly more sort of like more travelled fans, if you like, a bit further on down the road. But I think it's worth bearing in mind that, I mean, if anything, you know, Club England has been growing, and if anything, the England fan is becoming a greater constituency within the England game.
You see, that's just weird, isn't it? I mean, I remember a time when anyone saying that they were an England fan was just looked at as saying,
no,
what?
Certainly not an England fan first. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're an England fan in the tournaments when we qualified for them. This wasn't that long ago. It was a little while ago now. But, I mean, certainly in the qualification rounds for Italia 90, Wembley would rarely sell out.
True.
You used to get all the supporters round in front of the cameras.
Yeah.
So that it looked as though it was full. And this was like late 80s. So it's not that long ago.
No. You'd have to get your likes of Brazil to turn up at Wembley to get a real packed house, wouldn't you? Really.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that would normally be on a Saturday and like at the end of the season or something like that. So, you know, it'd be a nice day out.
The home internationals in Scotland were coming down. You know, stuff like that. I mean, that's when the home internationals, I think, were very important because they did swell the gates. But now, of course, it's very different. I mean, they charge, you know, big money for tickets, and people come and pay. And I think maybe this is a new development of the post Sky era, where a lot of people have started to consume their football via television, and perhaps haven't. You know, they come from parts of the country where there isn't a big local league club, and then maybe as a consequence, they've kind of gravitated towards a national team.
There's less time invested necessary, isn't it? Really, because I mean, like, you know, you don't have to be like around every Saturday. It's something you can do on a once a month basis.
Yeah. But that's in kind of contradiction to what we've been saying. So there's this mixture of this kind of like new wave of England fans who have come through, who are England fans, England supporters.
Yeah,
I should say. And then there's the rest of us, club fans, club supporters, who are maybe, you know, we're getting a little bit fed up of the whole thing.
Getting back to the whole thing about John Terry and the captain specifically, there is, of course, this kind of curious situation now. For several games now since the World Cup, Fabio Capello has been pretty keen on bringing in a continuous sort of selection of new players. We've got, Matt Jarvis is coming in this match. I think he made a brief appearance in one or two of the previous ones and so on. Lots of new players coming in. So from the point of view of John Terry, if he's got to be captain, of course he's got to essentially manage on the field a lot of these new players. I'm not sure quite how well he'll do in that respect. But looking at it from a different angle as well, when you look at Fabio Capello, if he's so keen to bring in so many new players in the team, what about a new captain? You could sort of say, well, if he's now really going on the front foot and sort of saying, well, I've only got so much time left in this contract of mine, you know, we're going to try and get to Euro 2012, but at the same time, I see there's a need to, bed in new players. Why not perhaps try and bed in, one or two new players as captain? How do you feel about that? Or is it too much of a risk, perhaps?
Yeah, but I think, you know, the names that are going to be top of the list are all going to be people that are going to have the same question marks over them as John Terry.
You mean, are you presumably you're maybe referring to the, you know, peers like, I don't know, Steven Gerrard or something like that? But
yeah, Steven Gerrard, Wayne Rooney.
Not in the squad.
I guess what I'm thinking is maybe just trying, but maybe appoint a young player.
Ashley Cole.
I wasn't thinking of that particular, but I mean, but one of the new, fairly new players that's had a little bit of experience, maybe, and sort of say, I don't know, maybe somebody like, well, I know it'd be, this is probably not a very good example, Adam Johnson or someone, I don't know.
There's so much focus on the role of England captain now that I don't know whether or not you can just simply bestow it for a temporary amount of time to a young player.
Yeah, I think if you look at the squad, I mean, like, you know, Joe Hart, you would say, is pretty much stick on now to be first choice England goalkeeper. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, we've said that about quite a few people who've gone between the sticks. So, yes, you could say, oh, well, let's make Joe Hart goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. Or you could say Phil Jagielka. He's probably the most... consistent centre-half that England have got in that next crop. But then again, if Ferdinand and Terry are fit, would he be picked above either of those? Then you look in the midfield, and I think you've got the same problem there. Probably the one player that would stand out as someone who would probably be quite high up on the automatic choice is probably Gareth Barry.
Mm. Yes.
I would think that's probably the closest you'll get to someone outside of that of the 50 cap plus.
If you look at that squad list which we have in front of us, we're looking at it now. It's difficult to see too many players there that you would think would be an appropriate choice as captain. Not necessarily because maybe because they're bad eggs or because they're not the captain's in material, but also just simply, but mostly because they just are not sufficiently embedded into the England squad. Leighton Baines, Gary Cahill, Ashley Cole, I don't think it's very unlikely. I think he would be given the captaincy. With Dawson, Jagielka, Johnson, Lescott, you know, all these guys have still got a way to go before they're even considered to be England regulars, let alone England captain. It's pretty much the same situation in the midfield. It's a little bit more encouraging when obviously there's Frank in there. Aaron Lennon's a bit been there, but I mean, even Aaron Lennon is. I still would suggest Aaron Lennon was a fringe player.
Well, yeah. Yes. Capello's already gone on record this season to say that taking him to the World Cup was a mistake.
Something that we don't necessarily agree with, I suspect. But
and I don't know how we feel about strikers as captains. Doesn't usually happen, but I mean, really amongst that crop there. I mean, there's Bent Carroll, only Crouch and Rooney are your sort of like genuine 50 caps plus, and I don't know whether or not Crouch has ever made any noises about wanting the job.
Can't see him as that kind of material. I think possibly
I'm sure Rooney would love to be England captain.
I was going to say he's the kind of loud mouthed oik.
I'm sure his general sponsor would love him to be.
I'm sure his general sponsor would love him. And it's important not to be personal about these things. I mean, I'm sure quite compelling reasons for him being allowed to develop his game after having had a very difficult summer and a bad World Cup and a poor start to the season. I think in many ways it would be. I'm sure his manager would rather him not be there at all. To be frank,
well, there is that. Yeah.
Because I think it's probably reasonable to say that everybody is kind of thinking that Wales won't be too much of a problem. Certainly, Wales' performance is up to this game. Should leave nothing for England to be fearful of. Obviously, bearing in mind it's foolish to be disrespectful to your local rivals, but at the same time, Wales have been poor in qualifying. There's no getting around it. So this should be a game that England should be able to win. Maybe not comfortably, but certainly should win. So I'm sure Sir Alex would rather Wayne be staying at home and looking after his own affairs.
Indeed. Well, I mean, the last game that England played, the friendly against Denmark, we had this situation where there was sort of three different players ended up as captain, and hence why this whole issue has kind of come to the boil somewhat. I mean, it is ironic, I guess, that in view of what we were saying before, this kind of growing, I think, antipathy towards the national game in favour of club football and the Champions League, whatever. Of course, if there was a situation where there was a bit of a gamble made on the captain, who should be the captain of the England team, if England didn't qualify as a result of decisions like that, of course, there would be complete uproar. So it is kind of key. But as we've discussed before, one has to wonder how much of an impact the captain has on affairs, no matter who it is, because there's different captaincy styles. But at the end of the day, I mean, I read somewhere the other day, like I think the Dutch model is it that basically all the players on the pitch essentially are told, you've got a brain of your own, make your own decisions, decide what sort of tactical changes to make at any given time and just get on with it. And maybe that's the approach to take.
Mm. Yeah, I think, isn't it Germany who just basically give it to whoever's got the most caps?
Yeah, Italy, really? Definitely. Possibly Germany as well, but it's definitely Italy.
Mm.
Yeah. I do remember reading somewhere that Fabio was slightly dumbstruck at this importance that had been attached to the England captaincy when he took over as England manager. It's like, well, what do you mean? Mm. But of course, in England, the England captain's role does come with additional incentives. I mean, there's obviously the extra PR work that the FA put them through, but there's also the money. You can make money from endorsements and that by being the England captain. Yeah, it's quite an important role.
You can probably sell some hospitality tickets to
for a reasonable consideration. I'm sure you could. Graham. Who would blame an England captain for providing such a valuable service?
I don't wish to be personal, Graham, but that's probably why you've never been given the England captaincy. If you've got ideas like that rattling around your head,
probably is. I'm just far too mercenary.
If you get any tickets, then you know where I live.
I think that the role, this current modern England captain role, I think has been defined very much by Sir David of Beckham.
Yes.
Because he obviously was, he wanted the role and had dreamed about having it since he was a boy, and he got to fulfil his dream, and then he got to be able to monetise it as well, in a way that Beckham and few players in the world have been able to monetise their career in the way that David Beckham has done. He is much more than a footballer, and when he was England captain, he was, he elevated the role to a genuine celebrity, genuine superstar. I am the England captain, and as a consequence, I think that a bit like John Terry was a bit of a sort of Gordon Brown to David Beckham's Tony Blair, John Terry wanted to be that big megastar like David Beckham was, but of course he lacks the panache. This is not a man who could sell arms to Colonel Gaddafi. It's going to be said.
Yes,
not convincingly, anyway.
One of the things to be said, Beckham has certainly mastered the art of monetization in a sort of way that simple podcasters and bloggers like us could never even dream of.
No.
Yeah, can we wrap this up? Because I've got a photo shoot immediately after.
Yes.
Yeah, I have to go and sit in front of a box of Cheerios or something. Like that.
I was going to say, so, Graham, those packets of Monster Munch don't sell themselves, do they?
No, they certainly don't. Pickled onion.
I used to advertise Monster Munch.
Yes, you did, and shampoo, didn't you?
And shampoo, and shaving foam as well.
Can we just break off the agenda?
How old were you when you were advertising shaving foam?
It's probably best not to dwell too much on it. But I was not of shaving age.
Well, I know I'll be on YouTube after the recording of this podcast.
Yeah, it was all pre-YouTube as well.
There we go. I didn't expect to suddenly go off at that kind of tangent. Anyway, let's in terms of England captains of the past and those that have brought something to the role, I mean, the various names trip off the tongue. I mean, obviously we have the likes of Bobby Moore, of course, the classic, although I'm just trying to think of what it was specifically that made him a good captain. I don't remember seeing him being particularly vocal on the pitch. I don't know whether he's just kind of one of those lead by example type of captains. I'm not quite sure.
He had the players. Harry was on the television yesterday and was talking about him, and he just said that basically the players just followed him, and that was that. So I don't think he needed to be terribly vocal or needed to be terribly demonstrative.
I suppose it helped that a lot of the players, especially in the 66 final, were actually playing at the same club as him as well, weren't they?
Don't you start.
Yes.
Don't start with that. Which club was that again?
Right. No, let's talk about that. More than happy to talk about that. But, I mean, OK, let's to bring in things up to date a little bit more. You got your Brian Robsons, of course, someone who has been in the news himself just recently, which we're sorry to hear. We wish him all the best for his recovery. I mean, that there was of course, Captain Invincible, as he was known, and someone who I see very much in the kind of Beckham mould, and indeed vice versa, as someone who just run and get stuck into, well, not so much Beckham getting stuck into every tackle, but just giving his all, and you could see that quite clearly. Would you say that's the sort of, is there a comparison between the likes of Brian Robson and John Terry in any way, or was Brian Robson a far, far better player and indeed captain? Without wishing to make it sound like a loaded question.
Well, Robson was, I don't think he was ever questioned about being captain. The only question mark over him was the fact that you know, there was large parts of his career when he just would throw himself into a game and then get immediately broken.
You miss some big games with him as captain. There's no question that he was one of our best players, of England's best players, I should say.
In a particularly lean period as well.
He certainly, if things could have been different if he had been able to maintain his fitness, but he didn't. So that's the end.
I mean, well, that said, we didn't do that badly in Italia '90.
No, by no means. No.
And how much of that did he play? Mm. He was injured in the first game.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, that's right. He was sat in BBC studios in London for the semi-final. Yeah. So.
Which also meant that Gazza could play.
Yeah, I mean,
or was it Platt who came on?
I think it was Platt actually did that.
Platt.
And I think he again with spectacular results and indeed, there's no way of being able to say that things would have been different or better. I actually suspect that they wouldn't have been any different or any better with or without him. But I certainly think that Mexico '86 might have been a different story if Robson was. Is that right?
Yeah.
Mexico '86 was. He wasn't around much for that one, was he?
He went off with his injured shoulder, of course, in the match in which Ray Wilkins decided to throw the ball at the referee.
Got sent off, didn't
he? That's another story. Yeah. It certainly seems to be that in the modern era, you've pretty much got to be a kind of hard man defender to take up the role. Of course, someone you know, Graham, all too well, Tony Adams, people like Stuart Pearce even, they certainly sort of epitomise that air of determination that you need. And I'm not sure, kind of looking at the defence now, apart from maybe John Terry, who's got, I guess, that kind of instinct, there's not many other candidates you look at and sort of say, well, I could compare him with your Stuart Pearces.
Yeah, it's weird. I suppose really because defensive players are always going to be like getting stuck in with the tackles. I mean, you Gary Lineker was captain for a while, wasn't he? And you never saw him getting stuck in. But then again, no one ever really thought of him as much of a leader. He was just there really to lead by example. Stand around a lot. And
Taylor's choice as captain, wasn't he? And I think that this was because Tony Adams, in fairness, was either in prison or was on his
He wasn't. For a lot of the time when Taylor was in charge, Adams was a fringe player for England. He'd been selected by Robson for 1988.
Yeah.
And he got torn apart by Van Basten.
Yeah.
And of course, he was only 21 at the time, wasn't he? And,
That's where the donkey.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Tag came from. Yeah. Stayed with him for almost his whole career.
Yeah, served only to.
Well, it spurred him on.
Spurred him on. Yeah. But I think you've got to look at. I think one of the best captain performances I've seen in sort of like the last 20 years, I suppose, was Alan Shearer's in 1998 against Argentina after Beckham got sent off.
Yeah.
And I thought Shearer was a fantastic player anyway, but the way he sort of like, you know, because he ended up going, he was all over the place in that game. He covered every blade of grass.
Yeah, he was playing fullback, centre mid.
Yeah,
you know, he was playing wherever he needed to be.
Yeah, and it was a fantastic, and it almost came off, it almost came off.
Yeah, it's a classic moment of heroic failure, isn't it? Which we do love. Don't we?
Yeah, which I suppose that's when you want your captains to stand up and say, "Well, at least he was there. At least you know you can point to him and say, well, that was a fantastic performance from him." And you know, he almost led a team through in a very very tough time. And yes, it was ultimately unsuccessful. But other than that, yeah, I mean, like you know, I'm struggling really to think about other examples of good captaincy.
I think if you go through the 1970s, it's difficult because up until Mexico 70 was really England's last hurrah, really until 82. I mean, it was a really barren period. We didn't go to either World Cup in 74 or 78. We did nothing in the European Championship, which is a very different tournament then.
Yeah.
We gained back. Robson was a captain in 82, and I think he was a captain in 86. And was not around much for either of those, and indeed 1990. Or was it? Who was the captain in 1982? Chris, you're the 82 World
Cup. In 1982, well, I think it was. I think you had like Mick Mills was captain quite a lot.
Was he really? Yes. Was he really? Yeah. I tell you, I beg your pardon. Okay, fair enough. So, all right. Well, in that case, I think that only serves to underline my point even more so than I'd actually forgotten.
Yeah, and people like Phil Thompson and even Phil Neal, I think, on one or two occasions, showing my age. But
when was Keegan captain?
Must have been
Keegan had a few goes at captain in the sort of late 70s, yeah.
I can remember some of those. In the European Championships in 1990?
I think he probably was, because certainly around that time when they were playing, England were hitting their peak in those home internationals against you know, Scotland, some of those classic games, he was certainly captain in those. Because I seem to remember at the time sort of thinking, oh, yeah, giving a captain to a striker, but it was obviously somebody who's, he was the star player at the time. Of course, he was, you know, he'd gone to Hamburg at the end of the 70s, and so it was one of those rare occasions of an English export. Interesting, all very interesting. I'm not sure kind of what else we can kind of bring to that, except of, you know, the fact that, of course, I mean, we haven't really mentioned John Terry's current form. I suppose we can use that as a kind of closing thing. I mean, Chelsea as a whole, it's argued now, are sort of coming out of the dark period and now getting their act together. And do we know, or do we feel perhaps that John Terry's form is perhaps alone worthy of him being given the role?
I think Chelsea's,
I can't say I've seen much of him recently.
I think Chelsea's resurgence, is probably more down to David Luiz than anyone else.
Yeah.
I think if anyone is given a side confidence and you know, belief, I think it's his centre half partner at the moment, because he looks phenomenal.
I haven't seen too much of Chelsea since the last time we spoke about David Luiz, and I remember expressing great excitement about his prospects. John Terry, I think, probably has the dressing room, and I think probably in that respect, from Capello's point of view, is a relatively uncontroversial choice, but of course it's not. But it is an easy and straightforward choice. Even if, to a certain extent, he has to sit and listen to pointless questions being asked to him by people like Brian Woolnough and Martin Samuel, who should know better.
Terry, you're right. I mean, he does have the dressing room, and I think really for England that's no mean feat.
No,
and I think, you know, if you can have the dressing room at Chelsea, I think you could pretty much have it anywhere, really.
And I mean, ultimately, I mean, once the brouhaha calms down, he's a footballer. And you know what he does is his private life, and what does it matter? You know, it's none of our business. And ultimately, really, I think the whole thing is probably massively overplayed, and I think that there are various reasons why that is, and we've just spent the last half an hour talking about why that might be. But ultimately, I don't think it's just that big a deal. I think England have got, if England want to win something, then we probably need to spend less time talking about this sort of stuff and more time talking about other stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. I think
not that
they
I wish
a
to
strong,
in any way undermine the last half an hour of your lives, because yeah. it was all well worth listening to us. Yeah,
we probably should have said it right at the top of the programme. This is going to be probably quite pointless. But there we are. Nevertheless, that's it. We've done with this issue. I was going to say just a moment ago, I think probably England need a strong coach and technically gifted players, and perhaps the whole kind of point about who's going to be the captain is therefore less of an issue.
I there definitely we think we should go back and talk about, I mean, not now, obviously, later on towards the end of the season, or maybe at the beginning, maybe when it comes to crunch for the end of the qualifying period, we should sit and talk about, have a serious discussion about England and what their prospects are on the international air. And that should take no more than 30 seconds.
Well, I was just going to say, we've got a minute left, we can probably squeeze it in if you like. Dear. Anyway, yes, we are pretty much out of time, so thanks very much. It's been an interesting podcast. John Terry, Mick Mills, Monster Munch, we've covered it all in this one. Thanks very much indeed for listening. We hope to have the pleasure of your company again, except to say that you're certainly urged to get in touch with us via Twitter and Facebook and our usual posts. All the details coming up a bit later on at the end of the show. But thanks very much indeed for listening, in association as ever with Net Radio UK. Do join us again next week if you can. Until then, from the Sound of Football, it's goodbye from the three of us. Goodbye.
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 You can contact the show via our website, footballfairground.com/soundoffootball, or on Facebook at facebook.com/soundoffootball, or follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/soundoffootball.